Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Makaranga is a journalism portal covering environment and sustainability-related topics in Malaysia. Helmed by writers Lau Yau Hua and Wong Siew Lin, the duo aim to provide relevant and insightful content that builds knowledge on ecosystems through their portal. In their first monthly episode here on Earth Matters, both the editors and co-founders of Makaranga join me to give a wrap-up of major environmental news from April and May this year, and we're also going to be discussing the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the environment and also on the people and organizations working in the environmental sector. Welcome to both of you. How are you today?
We're fine, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. So as I mentioned, you know, this is the first of what's going to be a monthly segment where you guys join us to give us a wrap up of all sorts of news related to the environment that, you know, we may have missed. But before we get into that, just remind us about the work that you do at Makaranga. You know, it's been almost a year, not quite. You're heading to your first anniversary, but how have things been?
Well, things have been very busy for Siew Lin and me at Makaranga. Yeah, right. It's been almost a year. We started our first stories sometime in July 2019, covering the ICCB conference in KL. Mm-hmm. And after that, we have been, I guess, there are two segments to the Makaranga portal. There's the journalism, environmental journalism portal, and then there's the ecosystems site. And we have been working on that a bit too, where we, you know, focus on one ecosystem and we'll add more. We have been working on the limestones one and we talk to people, experts, and they tell us about the animals, the ecosystems there. And so we've been working on that. And then we also been adding voices like, conservation, biologists, environmentalist voices to our portal. So mm-hmm. that's on the ecosystem side. And yeah, and then in terms of stories, we have done quite a few more, actually. I mean, we have a target to do it regularly. And so we have touched on deforestation. We have touched on the Linus issue. But I guess a lot of the busy work we have been doing is to set up Makaranga as a business. And so we have done that. And now we are on the lookout for we are busy looking for, I guess, funding and sponsors to drive some of our upcoming projects. Siew Lin, do you have anything to add?
No, I think you've summed it up quite well. The thing is that, yeah, in this first year, it was our plan anyway to test the portal, to get it up and running, to test reception as well. And and to get our sort of business model in place, if you like. So yes, it would be great if anybody wants to support investigative journalism, specifically to do with environment and sustainability, please do drop us a line.
And that is exactly why you started Makaranga, isn't it? You found that there was a gap, in existing sort of coverage on these sorts of topics, that there was perhaps not enough investigative journalism concerning environmental issues?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, there is a gap in environmental stories just all around.
Okay.
Testimony to that is that, you know, we were very surprised by the reception from, I guess, all the players in the field. Like, well, since July last year, I think we have been getting lots of emails and story tips saying, like, hey, would you like to cover this? You know, it would be a new research or something that concerns the environment. But the whole of Makaranga is just Siew Lin and me. So we didn't plan to do news stories, and we still don't do news stories. But yeah, you're right. So we want to do more analytical, in-depth, feature-length stories, but also, yeah, like the ecosystems part. Talk to researchers on a certain ecosystem. That is really like more of the natural history one and not the journalism per se. Yeah.
Well, I guess just based on the fact that almost 30 years ago, I used to work for a major English language newspaper, and the features section was as important, if you like, as the main news section. And as a features writer, we were able to delve a little bit deeper into issues, news related, obviously. And I covered the environment beat, you know, and basically every newspaper in every language, whether it was in Chinese or in Malay, had a an environment or environment stroke science beat. And unfortunately, features as a whole has kind of disappeared from the media landscape in Malaysia due, unfortunately, to funding. Yeah. And so we actually really appreciate programs like Earth Matters, because you guys are actually doing the kind of feature reporting, in-depth investigative kind of interviews that used to be covered by the feature sections.
Well, we do what little we can, I suppose. But okay, so, you know, the reason that we also want to talk to you is that you as you mentioned, you know, everyone is reaching out to you and telling you all the interesting things that are happening, and you've got your finger on the pulse of, you know, what's happening. So in, you know, just to kind of wrap up things that have happened in the past couple of months, of course, we have to start, I suppose, with COVID-19. Of course, that has been the number one headline throughout these past few months. We've been seeing so many reports of how conservation work to protect, you know, some of the world's most important ecosystems. That's facing a crisis, actually, following a collapse in, like, ecotourism, for example, during the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, what have you been reading? What have you been hearing?
Well, we have reached out to some of our friends in the across the environmental sectors, you know, to ask them, like, you know, how have you been impacted? I mean, this is one of our upcoming projects too, and the outlook is rather bleak, as we can expect. First, you know, a lot of the environmental NGOs depend on, as you said, tourism and also volunteer programs to either do the work or actually pay for the programs itself. So that has dried up. Many of the NGOs or the organizations, like, their first and foremost challenge now is finances. And some of them have resorted to cutting their own pay so that they can pay their staff who are doing, like, a bit of the work, like whatever work they can do. And a lot, but there's no field work, right? So the research has all gone. Mm-hmm. Field research has all stopped. So they could only do office work. And so whoever's doing some office work, so they have to channel the funds to pay those people. And that would mean cutting payment to the rest of the group and donations, right? If the organizations have been depending on donations, you know, big sponsors, that it has also dried up considerably, especially from overseas, it seems. So if they were, you know, dependent or they have had, like, a long relationship with overseas donors, oh, that dried up. And so now they are stuck, actually. And some of them have to, you know, they are all scrambling to look for alternative means of funding, you know. And you will see that many NGOs are now, you know, sort of like selling artwork or, you know, doing lots of stuff that perhaps they thought of doing before, but because, you know, before this, they were probably more donations and volunteers and sponsorship, so they didn't really put that much effort into that. But now they are really focused on that. Yeah, so that's the finances part.
And, you know, how does all of this then in turn impact conservation work itself?
That's one of the things that we feel needs investigating. Mm-hmm. We have been getting a lot of news from overseas about how conservation groups are trying to deal with COVID and come up with solutions. We've been hearing a lot of chatter online in Malaysia amongst conservation groups talking about how to deal with the upcoming uncertainty or the current and upcoming uncertainty, that sort of thing. But I think that's something we are very interested in, to try and dig a little bit deeper to find out actually what is going on, what are the impacts, and how are the different sectors trying to deal with this and cope with it?
If I can add, like, from what I've heard, so the research has stopped, right? So that's really bad for them. Yeah. No, conservation is based on science, right? And like, if their field research has stopped, if you look at it, it's not like it just stopped for this season. If the research project was meant to be over multiple seasons or multiple years, you stop this 2 months and then there's a break in between. And that's actually very troublesome. It might actually mean you have to restart the whole thing again. And so that's really troubling. And I think a friend from a project that worked on human-wildlife conflict also told me that although they can't go into the field, but human-wildlife conflict is still occurring. And then they can't do the work there. You know, they can't reach out and help the people there. They can't report immediately on the scene. They can't do their research. So that's also a problem.
Okay, so I mean, I'm sure you guys are going to be investigating that further. But, you know, throughout the pandemic, scientists have also been repeatedly urging humanity to, you know, reset its relationship with nature or perhaps suffer worse outbreaks. I mean, what would you say the impact of COVID has been on the environment itself?
Well, that's one of the things we really want to follow up on. So we've got in Makaranga, we've got the series called Taking Stock, where over the next few months, we're going to be looking at a way to sort of gauge the impact on the environment as a whole by looking at different sectors. So conservation would definitely be one of them. We've already started with the series talking to climate change activists, specifically youth, because again, we're looking at the future. It is an opportunity to so-called build back better. I think that's one of the phrases that's actually being used quite a lot. You know, how do we build back better? Because there's an opportunity to do so. So, for example, with the climate youth activists, what I found very interesting is that while they were caught, they were like climate change. The way to adjust to climate change is they actually adapted quite quickly. One group actually had to abandon whatever projects they had lined up. And they had some really amazing projects, and we managed to capture that in writing. But what they did was they had to abandon that in order to support their partners who were Indigenous people, basically Orang Asli, in order to make sure that they were looked after, their basic needs were looked after, because they were suffering from the lack of access to shops, no income, zero income, because of the the MCO, the Movement Control Order, and therefore they basically turned 100% of their efforts onto providing relief for their partners as well as the larger Orang Asli community. But that's just one sector. So that, you know, what we want to do is to look at all a handful of different sectors to really examine, you know, to pull out from all the bits of chatter we've been hearing to try and come up with individual stories based on individual stories of several sectors, and then come up with a large analytical piece at the end of it to try and pull together some of the threads, some of the findings that we have been able to uncover across the stories. And like what Yahoo has been doing, you know, we've just been hearing stuff from people in all the various sectors, from tourism to activists working with Orang Asli to climate change and so on and so forth.
Yahoo, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, talking about the impact of COVID on the environment, right, and the environmental sectors. So yeah, definitely we need to do a lot more digging to really gauge how the environmental sectors have been affected by COVID and how they are adapting. But just based on what we know now, you know, what I could read and speaking to the different groups, I think the situation is bleak and very challenging, but there are also lots of opportunities in there. Like, for example, the COVID, you know, since the Well, by now it's 2 months, right, that Malaysia has been under a movement, restricted movement control. And we could feel the changes ourselves. Like, you know, the air is clearer, the water, like, you know, there have been reports of rivers being cleaner. Definitely noise pollution has gone down a lot. And, you know, there's not as much dust and, fine particles in the air. And there have been reports by research centers that smog, you know, gases that causes our breathing problems, asthma, have decreased by, you know, up to 60% in KL since the MCO. And I think this really gives everyone like a chance to experience and feel what it could be a cleaner environment if we have a lot less traffic, if we are somehow able to stagger or to reduce our industrial activity or to control it somehow. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping that the environmental sectors are able to use this and sort of transform it into some sort of a behavioral change in the mass public, to build on this, to tell them that, hey, you know, this is what we are trying to achieve, but let's not wait for another COVID to feel this again. Yeah, I mean, a cleaner environment. Yeah.
If I may add to that as well, I think the issue with, you know, everybody saying, oh, look what happens to nature when humans aren't there to mess it up, with a kind of statement like that, the problem is there's no agency. And I think there's a great need to look at agency. So as Yaohua says, yes, what are the different environmental sectors doing to try and effect behavioral change in order to let what, you know, this glimpse of a better, cleaner, environment-friendly, sustainable world, how can we let this sort of carry on and be a reality in the long term? But the thing is, there is no such thing as, oh, humans are, you know, we have to look at agency. We have to look at, for example, communities, industries. We have to look at the role of government in all of this. And that's one of the things that we'd like to look at as well, because there's been a big impact on the second large impact on environmental sectors, as with the rest of the country, has been the abrupt change of government.
That's right. And I guess at this point, everything is very uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know when, you know, things are going to go back to normal, if there ever can be a normal again, whether there should be a normal again. You know, that's also up for discussion. There's just so much of uncertainty at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, it will become normal if it stays for 5 years, right? That would be the normal that everyone remembers.
I think everyone...
Changing baselines.
Yeah. Changing baselines, yes, that's right. But, you know, one of the things about the pandemic is that everyone's saying that we need to come out of it, hopefully learning some lessons, you know, and hopefully making some impactful changes so that we don't make the same mistakes twice. You know, what are some of the things that you look forward to seeing happening, you know, in this new normal that's going to be our normal?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, right, you know, to build on this experience of a cleaner environment, cleaner air, right? So I'm hoping really that you know, the policies, you know, by the new government and local councils, you know, we can move forward in that direction. For example, encourage more, perhaps biking, anything that reduces traffic, carpooling, that would be great. Well, I guess there will be some time after COVID has passed, so nobody's afraid of being carpooling. And then also renewable energy. You know, there is a plan by the government, or at least the previous government, to achieve 20% renewable energy in our electricity mix by 2025. And that's 20% excluding the large hydro dams. And I think we are currently around like 2% or slightly more than that. So that's a huge target. And I hope we are able to continue on that path so that we rely less, a lot less on fossil fuels. Yeah, and I think that's something I'm really hoping for.
Now let's kind of just look at, you know, things that have been happening, you know, as people try to maintain some sense of normalcy in this time. You know, there were still lots of events happening. All the ground events, of course, moved online. You know, we had lots of webinars. Things like Earth Day, for example, were still observed. Tell me a little bit about what, you know, what's been going on online, in the online sphere.
Yeah, so I was kind of looking at Earth Day. We wanted to do a piece for Earth Day 2020, which was in April, 22nd of April. And globally, there was this major plan to have Earth Day be a huge a huge event to address climate change. Mm-hmm. It was going to be climate strikes in person, of course. There were going to be the largest global climate strikes ever sort of thing. And of course, that didn't happen. Yeah. So I think everybody all over the world were like, oh my God, you know, how are we going to do this, you know, sort of thing. And then there was a scramble to go online. As you said, everything did have to move online, but it was not easy. It wasn't like, you know, we can just do this straight away. I think they tried to hold on as much as possible to see if they could actually have events in real life, mm-hmm. and then decided, okay, this is just not going to work. And so what eventuated for Earth Day was like the largest digital protest ever, in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And I thought it was a very interesting exercise to see how the digital platform really could be used to protest in such a big way. Now in Malaysia, I think I felt at least that there was actually sort of radio silence from everyone because of the shock of both COVID as well as the abrupt change in government. So like people were like, oh my God, you know what, how are we going to respond to this? How are we going to move? And then suddenly in conjunction with Earth Day, so everything went online. Now everything was available online. And I think these events, I think for me personally, I felt an onslaught of events and very exciting. I think I felt woken up suddenly because all these events were suddenly available to me. In other words, I could maybe decide if I wanted to go to, attend one webinar and then halfway leave and attend another webinar or another event. I could actually do that, which was a very interesting experience for me. And everybody was on it, groups that for me, a little bit unexpected. There was a space making group, you know, who actually had a week of Earth Day celebrations, which included music, which included discussions. Every single day, there was an environmental consultancy, which also held their webinars at this time, and they engaged with all sorts of stakeholders. So everybody had a chance to speak about what was going on. And it, so this is the chatter I'm referring to, you know. And then even smaller groups had a Skype a scientist kind of session over 4 nights, which got responses from Ecuador and, you know, all sorts of places. Very, very encouraging. And, you know, I just felt, okay, this digital thing actually is working, you know, and it's very interesting.
And I mean, even things like, you know, national parks open, you know, there were people doing, you know, follow them through the camera, you know, and you take a virtual tour and things like that. So there were so many different avenues that opened up to everybody around the world during that very trying time.
Yep. Yeah. So I'd just like to add that this whole pandemic, right, it's really an experiment on many, many fronts. And when it comes to the webinar, it's really an experiment for all sectors to try out whether we can actually move away from physical conferences and onto the digital world, you know. For example, like ecology conferences have always been debating. You know, we talk about saving the environment, but everyone flies from all over the world into one city. Right. I think this is a real great opportunity to test out, you know, how quickly we tire from our fatigue from digital webinars without the coffee break. how long can we last? But I would say, yeah, it's a great experiment. Yeah.
It certainly addresses an issue that we raised. Earth Matters was kind enough to have us on to speak about our coverage of the ICCB, an International Congress on Conservation Biology, which was held in KL last year. And it became a bit of a gripe amongst local conservationists that they could not attend because the barriers to entry with regard were too high, you know. Basically, the registration fee was too high. And also then, you know, like, for example, people who lived outside of KL had to fly over, and then who was going to pay for that the cost of the flight and all that sort of thing again. So, you know, this again, I think, actually helps to address an issue that has been ongoing and kind of blew up last year amongst conservationists through this ICCB conference, okay, which we covered. Yeah.
That's right. Yes, we spoke about that last year. So, I mean, I guess this, again, we don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's something that Makaranga is going to be looking at, you know, through your Taking Stock segment, for example, and, you know, through your investigative journalism. But I know it's not easy running the portal. You know, is there any sort of help that you would need or that you are looking for, you know, in terms of continuing the work that you do?
Yeah, I guess like all the other NGOs that we have been speaking to, finances is probably our main, is what we are really working for. Otherwise, we will have to do our side jobs and then all Makaranga becomes a side job. We don't want it to become like a side project, right? So yeah, so in terms of finances and sponsorships or in any other form, the kind of support would be very helpful. I mean, we have been trying to get grants and we have already won 2 grants on an ongoing project. So yeah, but we definitely welcome more help.
Xiulin, anything you'd like to add to that?
Not really, but if I could plug something else that we're doing or encourage people, please, we are in the midst of running a survey to feed into our Taking Stock stories. And basically, the survey is to help us gauge the impact of COVID on conservation specifically. And we would like to use the results from that survey to inform our storytelling and perhaps follow up with interviews if the people are so willing. But otherwise, it's completely anonymous. So do send us a mail at editorial@makaranga.org and we'll send you a link to the survey and really appreciate your help there.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Lau Yao Hua and Wong Xiulin. They are the co-founders and editors at makaranga.org. And we've been taking stock of the environment with the both of them. And again, if you'd like to get in touch, you just need to go to makaranga.org. That's makaranga.org. And you can find out how to get in touch. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.